participated in some of the activities of the Apollo program, was selected and flew on the first Skylab mission in 1973, was commander of the first Challenger flight, the sixth shuttle mission in April of 1983, and presently the deputy chief of the astronaut office.
Well, I was selected to be an astronaut about 12 years after Paul was. I was also a Navy pilot. I was busy at the time as a Navy test pilot when I was selected. I flew my first space flight, only space flight so far, in 1984. First flight of Discovery as the pilot. And was scheduled to go back up this past June as a commander of my own crew. That is, of course, being postponed now until we resume flying again. We're looking forward to the program getting back on its feet. It'll probably be about a year and a half before we resume the shuttle flights again, and all the testing goes okay before then.
I would like to say a few words about the future of our manned space program, at least as I see it. Mike is free to agree or not, as he sees fit. But as Mike put it so well in a TV interview this morning, the dream is still alive. We intend to resume flying. We intend to make the shuttle safer than we thought it was before. Obviously, the accident was, in fact, a tragedy. It was, in fact, a tremendous setback for the U.S. manned space program. We've encountered adversity and overcome it before, and we intend to do that now. It necessitates a redesign of the seals, as I'm sure most of you are aware, in the what are called the field joints of the solid rocket boosters. At the same time, since we thought the system was safe before, and it turned out that we did, in fact, have a problem we did not appreciate, our intent is to scrutinize in minute detail all the considerations of the other very complex systems that go together to make up the what we call the shuttle transportation system, which does, in fact, include more than the orbiter. It includes, as I said, the solid rocket boosters, the external tank, and also those components and functions that are performed by and on the ground.
The only other thing I'd like to point out is that we are not wasting our time right now spinning our wheels while we're waiting for the shuttle to get ready again. As Paul said, we're reevaluating the whole program, making improvements wherever we can, and one of his primary jobs right now is coordinating the astronaut activities to support all the different efforts that are going on right now to reevaluate the shuttle and all the procedures and hardware and computer software and so forth. So we're working as hard right now, looking at the whole program, as we ever were while we were flying. We're quite excited to be down here introducing the Dream is Alive movie this week. One of the questions that we get most often is, what is it like to fly in space? It's very difficult to describe it in words because it's mostly a visual experience up there. And up until now, it's been very difficult to tell people or show people with the photography we had available what it's like to live and work in space and to look at the Earth from space. We flew this IMAX camera, which is a new type technology, 70mm movie film, on three flights in the summer of 1984. My flight was the middle one, so I did quite a bit of the photography in the movie, and we're quite excited about the way it turned out. We think it's almost like being there to look at the movie on the big screen, and we're proud of the way the movie turned out. Of course, when you have a narrator like Walter Cronkite, beautiful music, even my home movies would probably look great, but we think that the movie is a tremendous experience for everybody, and we're encouraging everybody to come down to Dream World and see the movie. It's, we think, something that everybody should be proud of.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. I'm sure that took note of your last comment. Without further ado, are there any questions, general questions for the Katrina? Yes.
What kind of problems did you encounter with Discovery?
Well, we flew the first flight of Discovery, of course. The first problem we had was the first time we tried to launch, we counted down to about 3 seconds, and the engines started to light off, and then the computers detected a problem and shut the engines down. So we weren't quite as high as we expected to be when the engines quit. And it was 2 months later before we actually lifted off the launch pad for the first flight of Discovery.
How did that make you feel?
The launch abort itself, you mean? Well, we were probably the most relaxed people around because we knew exactly what was going on. It was very quiet out there after the engines quit, but everybody else was hearing the echoes and so forth and wasn't quite sure what was going on. So we were quite relaxed. There was a minor fire that it took them a while to put out from residual fuel leaking. And we sat there and listened to that. If they had asked us to escape the orbit at the time, we were quite ready to jump out and do that. It certainly wasn't necessary. We were quite safe inside the shuttle. If you've got a fire outside, it's the best place to be. It's inside the shuttle.
After the shuttle disaster earlier this year, has it deterred you from wanting to go up again?
No, I don't think so. One of the nice things about being so intimately involved with the design and so forth of the shuttle is that we're very familiar with how it works and how it's designed and how it's supposed to be used. So we know enough about it to know where the strengths and weaknesses are, and we're quite confident that we're going to have a very safe program when we get the thing flying again. I guess the biggest problem is convincing our family that it's as safe as we think it is.
Well, what happens there? You sort of kiss your wife and children goodbye every time you go up?
Well, we've got a chore there. There's no doubt about it, to convince the families that it's safe to go up now. None of us expected a disaster like this to happen. It certainly is a traumatic experience for all of us. We lost a lot of good friends. We've just got a challenge ahead to convince everybody, the public in the United States and the world, and our families that it's safe to go fly again. And we're convinced that enough work is being done that it will be safe to go fly again.
Very brave attitude. A lot of people might sort of disagree with that. They might say, you know, wouldn't you off again?
Well, I'm not sure brave is the right word. There's no doubt that in every launch now, when we get to the 73-second point, the same thought's going to go through everybody's mind. But you're so busy during a flight, during a launch, and all throughout the flight, that you really don't have time to sit there and think about the dangers involved. We go through an awful lot of training to prepare for any eventuality that we can handle. And that's what you're thinking of. And you tend, when you are faced with a problem, is to react automatically like you've been trained to. So you're so busy you don't have time to be afraid. And to me, you can't really be brave unless you're afraid first and then you overcome that. So we're too busy to be brave, I guess you'd say.
What's the morale like right now about the people in space program?
That depends on which aspect of the program you're working in. Morale is pretty high in the astronaut office. However, you know, we have, besides the shuttle program, we have a significant effort that's going on towards Space Station, which is an upcoming program, and which, frankly, right now is not going well. Yeah. We're having problems with schedule and budget. Again, frankly, that NASA's response to the shuttle Challenger accident in January and the support that we expected from the White House much earlier than it showed up, the whole process just seems to drag out a little bit, which all contributes to the whole thing, not any one thing in itself, but all these little bits and pieces that add up to, frankly, a lowering of morale within the agency that is still fairly high, I think, but it's lower than it was before.
Do you have any thoughts at all on the current space program that the Australian government's just announced? It's planning to look into space a little bit more than what it has in the past. Have you heard about that?
Yes, but only very briefly. As I understand, there's an article in this morning's paper about perhaps building a so-called space base in northern Queensland. We are always eagerly seeking the participation of our friends and allies, and Australia certainly meets both of those criteria to participate in the exploration of space, hopefully on a cooperative basis, and hopefully using the shuttle as the resource that we have available. But we'd like to see. I personally think that a little friendly competition is good. I think that Ariane is not bad for the U.S. shuttle program. I think it's good for the shuttle program.
Do you see the Australian developers now as competition?
No, I don't. Well, yes, it would be competition, but healthy competition.
Captain Coates, what do you think, Captain Weitz, what do you think is the proposal to have a space launch base in Far North Queensland?
Well, that goes along with what I just said, in which I think that it's worthwhile. As I say, it will get Australia more involved in the exploration of space. It will have some advantages in that the launch sites are, the launch site I assume would be closer to the equator than is Cape Kennedy. That's part of the reason, as Mike pointed out earlier today, why the French have their launch site in French Guiana to put them close to the equator, because most of the communication type satellites, such as the two OSATs that are up now, are placed in geostationary orbits, which means they basically have to be over the equator. So it's cheaper for those folks if we can put them closer to the equator. So again, I think that we need the help and the friendly competition that Australia can provide.
Do you think Australia has a lot of potential in that area?
I can only assume it does. I don't know. They've been participating in cooperatively in our space program since at least the days of Apollo. There have been, and I forget which university now, but there has been some Australian scientists who have had a very active part in the analysis of the lunar samples were brought back on the Apollo missions.
Are you afraid that other countries might try to overtake the American space program if you're not going to be going back into the air for about another year and a half?
Absolutely. I mean, that's a risk.
Where do the Soviets stand at this? Are they breathing down your neck?
Well, there are some convincing arguments that can be made for the fact that as far as long-term manned programs, manned state times in orbit, obviously the Russians are way ahead of them. You know, they've had folks who've spent, 237 days in orbit. Our longest was in the Skylab program, that was 84 days. The portent of that is that basically they are just building up more man hours. They're EVA man hours now. I mean, man hours in the broadest sense, ladies, have exceeded ours.
Do you see it as a race between you and them?
Well, certainly there is. There always is. And I think that's healthy, too.
And who's winning then at the present time?
And my estimate is that the Russians are ahead in actual experience.
But experience isn't everything.
That's right.
If you're looking at other developments.
The technology, I think they're behind us. Some folks are convinced that the reasons, Russia is developing a shuttle. Their shuttle, from what we have been able to gather, and within NASA, we still play the game of playing open and above board, so we don't have any access to classified data, but we do read a U.S. publication called Aviation Week and Space Technology. And according to the information that they put out in there, is the Russian shuttle looks remarkably similar. I can't use the word identical because it's not, but it is as close to identical as you can get without being so. And there are some people who feel that they probably picked up the technology to develop their shuttle during their involvement in the ASTP, the Apollo-Soyuz Test Project, which was the joint Apollo project with the Russians back in 1975.
Captain White, why are you actually here? Is it Captain White, why are you actually here? Is it to promote the movie or to promote NASA?
We're here to promote NASA through the medium of what turns out to be an excellent visual presentation in the IMAX movie.
Do you think NASA needs promotion after the bad publicity it's had in the last year or two?
Yes, I think it does, but this type of promotion, as it were, is not new with the accident. We have been involved in what we call appearances, or what you might call promotion. I tend to refer to it as education and information since the very advent of the space program. It started back in the Mercury days, and we've had astronauts going about the world, and we concentrate a lot domestically within the U.S. because we have taxpayers to answer to there. But we've been trying to carry this message of education information to the general public for 25 years.
Is it unusual to come to Australia with that message?
Can I turn this one over to Mike? Yeah. I've been talking for a long time.
You're doing such a good job.
Is it unusual to bring that message to Australia?
I guess you'd say it's unusual, but it's not unheard of. We've had several of the astronauts have come down here before. Shannon Lucid, our female astronauts, was down here just last year, I believe. So it's not all that unusual. And we do have a tracking station down here in Canberra that many of the astronauts have visited over the years. In fact, in the early manned space program, we always had an astronaut down here during our flights. So it's not all that unusual to have people down here. We're quite excited about being down here and being able to see so many people and talk to so many people about the space program.
Can you tell us the difference between Australia on the air and Australia on the ground?
Well, we flew over Australia. Every shuttle flight goes over Australia quite a bit, of course. And you've got an awful lot of open area out in the middle of your continent that doesn't have a whole lot there to see from the air. The coasts are just beautiful from the air. We did bring some pictures down when we came to pass out to the appropriate people of what it looks like from space in specific areas. Our East Coast and West Coast are very beautiful. In between, there's a whole lot of ground.
Have you convinced many little Australians to become astronauts?
I've convinced a couple myself. I've talked to several young people. I talked to one young boy this morning who wanted to be a jockey, and he decided now he wants to be an astronaut. I told him being an astronaut is probably a lot safer than being a jockey.
Right, we have time for a couple more questions. Anyone else?
I just want to ask you about the military applications of space capping lights. Is that a big factor in space exploration?
Well, that's not exploration so much as exploitation. The shuttle is a national resource. The utilized as our then president, whoever that may see fit. The shuttle endeavors so far have been in the placing of, again, I get from Aviation Week, since when we do launch a classified payload, only that crew and a certain select, very tight group of folks within NASA are privy to what the payload is and what its purpose is. But assuming that Aviation Week is correct, in which they are reconnaissance satellites, is that we consider that to be an essential part of both our national defense posture, which we feel only promotes the world peace by virtue of the fact that we keep an eye on the Russians just as the Russians keep an eye on us. But I would trust that there's a common misconception from, and I had a couple people while I was wandering around by the model ask if NASA was going to be dedicated to military missions, classified missions from here on out, and I would like to try to clarify that we obviously have a responsibility to fly some Department of Defense missions, but the intent within NASA is that we will satisfy our commitments to the extent that we can, especially in the pure science payloads. NASA is trying to encourage private industry and entrepreneurship in developing resources to launch satellites, such as SATCOM, OSSAT, and what have you. But the pure science missions, such as the Hubble Space Telescope, the Space Lab missions, the various aspects, you know, and there are different dedications of those missions. It's still NASA's intent to fly them within our capability.
Chris, have you a question?